A little bit, Senator Saxog has been waiting so patiently.
Oh.
Welcome to the committee. Could you proceed with your bill?
Such a nice young boy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today I'm presenting Senate File 2466. This bill will allow for local units of government to help finance volunteer emergency services. With me today is Robin Essick. Yeah, better. To give brief testimony and help answer any questions that we may have.
Hey, could you state your name for the tape, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rob Vanasek, here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships. And this bill just allows, it was brought up by a township up in Senator Saxog's area, and current statute laws allows a city or town to donate funds to public and private hospitals, but it does not allow, it does not allow folks to donate to first responder units, ambulance services, paramedic units, or similar critical emergency service providers. So the Minnesota Association of Townships strongly supports the bill, as does the Minnesota Ambulance Association.
Thank you.
With that, I'll stand for questions.
Any questions for Mr. Vanasek? Seeing none. Senator Seedlin.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to move the bill when it's the appropriate time.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? Anyone else care to testify for or against Senate File 2466?
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Robley.
Mr. Chair, I just am kind of wanting an example maybe of what brought this here so that we understand why an emergency medical services agency wants to be able to accept grants from the city, too.
Mr. Vanasek.
As you know, out in rural Minnesota, the services are a little bit further between them than they are as you get closer to the metro. I, for one, was a firsthand experience, was an emergency medical technician for several years, out in the township, 10, 15, sometimes 20 miles away, the first responder folks, they're volunteers, they train, they put in the time, they attend a lot of classes I taught that gives them, the basic first responder skills. They have to be registered, certified, everything. But they are able to show up in a timely fashion ahead of the county ambulance or the private ambulance. And those folks do so. They put in, a lot of time, but they do put in a lot of their money and their own money. And, in addition to the pancake breakfasts and the spaghetti feeds, this would allow them, and this is not a mandate, but a local option for a city or town to make a donation and help provide some of the services to their folks in their community, just as they're able to do for a hospital.
Thanks, Senator Robley.
Could you it says for it's an emergency medical service agency as defined in section 144.27401. Does that mean it has to be a nonprofit? I guess that's kind of where I want to go with this. Are we allowing them to make gifts or grants to for-profit, or is it strictly non-profit?
I believe it is public or private. It doesn't matter if it's my understanding, there is no distinction between non-profit or for-profit organizations. But, I'm not familiar with a lot of the first responder, rural associations around the state, but my assumption is that most of these folks are nonprofit residents.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like your bill, Senator Saxhog, and I'm just wondering if it's inclusive enough, and maybe I don't understand all about this, but I was wondering if there'd be any other agencies other than emergency medical services agencies that might serve a city or a town that might want to receive these grants. And I'm thinking, since I served on the board of the Red Cross, that would they be covered here, or am I not thinking about this in that way? I'm just not sure. I support the bill, but I'm just thinking that there might be other entities, and I don't want to delay the bill, but you know, I'm just curious about that.
I don't have the statute book in front of me, but it's defined by law, the folks that'd be eligible. It's 144.7401, and those include first responder units, ambulance services, paramedic units, and similar emergency service providers.
So, Mr. Chair, would it include the Red Cross, or are they not anybody that maybe they make their own grants? I guess
Senator McGuire, that would be a different bill. That would be a pretty significant expansion.
Okay. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Saxhog or Senator Sieben moves that Senate File 2466 be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog. Senator Chamberlain. Senate File 1094 is laid over and is now taken up. Senator Chamberlain, I understand you have an amendment that addresses some concerns.
Yes, Mr. Chair. One amendment A4.
Do we have that amendment? Or?
Everybody have it?
Does everybody have the amendment? It should be in the.
Just briefly on the amendment, Mr. Chair, is try to satisfy and clarify some things. What this does is, as far as petitions, it changed on page 2, clarified it would be a school district. So we're putting school district, eligible voters within the school district. The next one is line 2, we're deleting general. And again, putting school district, again, further clarifying. And then on line 2.4, we are putting state general election. So that would be, I spoke to council, that would be the same as, say, in an even year election. So what we have here is 15% of the eligible voters in that school district, and then that would be put on the ballot, petition would be put on the ballot. That would be the petition to get it on the ballot. And then once it's on the ballot, it would have to be at the next state general election. So what we've done here is we've broadened the universe to eligible voters. And so we keep it at 15% to get the petition, to qualify the petition. And then some more people are involved in the election, a larger turnout, we'll put it on the general election ballot, state general election ballot. So that is the amendment.
Okay, further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. To the bill.
Mr. Chair, members, we had a lengthy discussion last time, and that was centered around clarifying what this bill does and the election process. And the only thing that this bill does for elections is getting the petition on the ballot, enough signatures on a petition to get the request on the ballot, and then get enough people at the election so that they debate it among enough people to have that discussion before they choose to switch from school boards to education boards.
Okay, Senator Chamberlain renews his motion that Senate File 1094 be there's further discussion. Senator Kilosh.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I thought in the last committee meeting we amended it on 2.1 to change 15 to something else, 30 or 25.
Mr. Chair.
I'm
Ms. Engel can maybe help us with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Kielesch. There was a motion to amend that a couple of different times, and they were both withdrawn, so I don't think that amendment had ever been voted on.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, I think that people were thinking about the higher percent in case we were referencing the school board election only in an odd year election, but he is making it clear that it would be based on 15% of the state general election. And so then it is a higher threshold typically, don't you think?
I thought the amendment made it so it's 15% of school district election to petition to get it on the ballot.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Chamberlain.
I'm not quite sure I understand all the questions, but again, we're just talking about the number of eligible voters that they have to get on the petition to get a question on the ballot. So the whole universe of eligible voters is much larger than registered voters. And what we changed in an amendment, the author's amendment last time, was simply changing registered to eligible, and then because that's a larger universe, and we wanted to also clarify that it was within the school district. So that was.
Senator Stevens, one more question, then we're going to vote.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we have more questions, and also that we should hear from the School Board Association, I would hope. But my question or my point is that on line 2.1 and 2.2, Senator Chamberlain, you're still to put the question to the ballot, which would obviously have significant local impact costs or costs to run this election. You're now only requiring 15% of those voting in the last school district election. So in my opinion, you went the wrong way, because to get it on the ballot and incur all those costs for the school board to administer the election, there's a lower threshold because it's only 15% of people who were registered to vote in the last school district election. Or 15% of those, who voted in the last school district election. So that's going to be, again, if we talk about school district elections, sometimes have 10 to 15% turnout, and it's only 15% of that turnout, you're talking about a really small number of people who could impose these really big costs on a local school district for having to run this sort of election. And then not to mention that the amount of money that will have to be raised or spent to then educate the voters about the impact of what they're either even going to be voting on.
Senator Sieben, it just reflects the number of people in order to get an election, not the number of people voting.
Right, but Mr. Chair, my point is that now it will be really easy to put this on the ballot, causing school districts to bear all these costs for then having to have the election. So it should be a higher threshold. There should be more voters within a district who want to do this. They should have the burden on them to have to organize themselves and get a number of people to want to put this to the ballot, to the voters. We're moving in the wrong direction, in my opinion.
Hey, Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben. The only reason we got 15% is because it generally falls within the scope of all these other statutory provisions and requirements that's in statute and rule and policy around the state for different types of petitions and to get things on the ballot in different various elections. And that's why we picked 15%. I think I can look in my notes, but I think we had levy requests, 15-20%, different things like that. So that's why we took the 15%. That's why we went with that, because it applied to school districts and different types of elections. I understand what you're trying to say.
Senator Chamberlain renews his motion at Senate File 1094.
Mr. Chair,
be recommended.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, Lee, from the test.
All those in favor say aye.
Mr. Chair,
aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is
passed. Division.
All provision has been called for. All those in favor say aye. Raise your hand. All those opposed? There being 8 ayes and 6 nays, the bill is passed.
fiscal.
Mr. Chair, could I just ask a question?
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So perhaps you could tell us how many minutes we're going to be debating each issue, and we'll know whether we're able to ask questions or not. I think it's really, we're supposed to be a deliberative committee. This was a rather large issue that we were discussing,
Senator
and we
McGuire,
weren't able
we discussed this, and we're ready to vote on it.
But we did not. We're not ready to vote, Mr. Chair. We had lots of questions, and we it was brought to us for the first time last committee here, and we had
McGuire,
lots of questions
about
it.
We will get the business of this committee done. So.
Without questions, Mr. Chair, is that my question to you? Are we going to be not able to ask questions?
You will be able to ask questions.
Just not on that bill.
That was something.
I'm not sure. We're going to recess for just a few minutes.
So we didn't have time to ask questions.
But we have time to recess. And we have time to not start for 45 minutes.
Oh, you want me to sit down?
Yes. Wait, committee for an hour.
Yeah, we can have a recess.
No, we're waiting for Perry.
We should talk to, we should, Chris
Turner.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair and
members.
Judicial. Here. This is the first time I've done this, so I can see this would be me. Senate file 1664.
municipalities. Three amendment that I would ask one of you to move on my behalf. By adopting this, the bill would be essentially in the same format as is in the House version that's sitting on the House floor.
Senator Chamberlain moves the, or Senator Limmer moves the A3 amendment. Discussion to the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Amendment is adopted. To your vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, what this bill does is I would ask you to put yourself in the shoes of being a small business owner, in particular a garbage hauler in the state of Minnesota. And you're going to hear from some of the garbage haulers that have been affected by some law changes. But if you were a garbage hauler in the state of Minnesota, you might be at risk of losing your customers if a city or a county decides to organize weight garbage hauling in the community. And there are actually there are some examples that you'll hear about with some garbage haulers. But what this bill does is say that if a municipality, a city or a county, decides to organize the collection in that city, and the consequence is that the small business, the hauler, loses the entirety of its business in that city, that then the hauler has a cause of action, can go to seek and develop a claim for just compensation for the loss of that business. I don't see it as very much different than if the government decides to take a farm or a gas station. If the government decides to take a gas station, the gas station would be compensated not only for the real property but also for the loss of the business, and there would be a market valuation of the value of that business at the time of that taking. I do look at this as a confiscation. If government puts a business out of business, there is a consequence. And so, members, this bill is about actions having consequences. There are some that believe that this type of action, the organized collection, should be prohibited by statute. I don't agree with that. I think cities can act in the best interests of the residents and make decisions about whether or not garbage hauling should be organized and whether or not that is in the best interests of the residents. But I hope that you would consider that if the cities or counties decide to do this, then there should be some compensation for the value of the taking. And if you look in Subdivision 3 of the bill, there is a very short window of time within which an affected party can bring any kind of a claim. I believe it's Subdivision 3. Yeah, the statute of limitations, which is 6 months from the time of the decision-making. So it's a very short window of time where the cities may have to face the fact that there are consequences for their actions. And Mr. Chair, we do have some folks here to testify about their experience with this.
Senator Sieben, do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to know the how the debate on this is going to unfold. Are you going to let us ask questions and let people who are opposed to the bill testify today?
Yes,
or
we
not?
Can, but I would remind you, if we don't get through all the bills, the bill won't get done.
So there may be time for the proponents of the bill, but not the opponents?
No, there'll be time. We'll spend a few minutes on each. Say, there are quite a few people here to testify. Senator Ortman, would a couple minutes for each person be sufficient?
I think that's appropriate, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. We'll take the – who would care to testify for the bill?
Mr. Chair, we have Mr. Tennis and Mr. Berkopek. I'm having a hard time reading all the writing here. But Mr. Tennis is here, and he was here to testify previously on this bill. Back.
Can you state your name for the tape, please?
Hi. My name Chair, members, my name is Willie Tennis from Tennis Sanitation. Just like to give you a little history about our company. My dad and uncle started it back in 1966, and they both had full-time jobs at the St. Paul Union Stockyards. They started this out part-time, and about a year into it, my uncle got transferred. And so my dad asked me if I'd be his helper, so I was 13. And back in those days, you had the burning barrels back in the backyard when you used to burn the ashes. We started with zero customers. In 1978, my brother wanted to get involved in a business, so he got involved. And him and I, we just basically live for our business. We don't hunt, we don't fish. And our parents worked until 1988. They retired. And we have our wives involved. We each have a son. We each have a daughter involved in the business. We also have employees that have been with us for 20-plus years and their families that count on us. And I personally do sales for our company, so, I mean, it's our life. And we made it through all the changes, the no-burning, recycling, compost. We made it through all those changes, and we can compete, big haulers, little haulers. We don't have a problem there. But the thing we can't compete with is government. Everyone knows the city of Maplewood just went to a single hauler. We lost 20% of our business there. And so it's looking like we're probably going to have to be laying people off, and we've never had to do that in our 46 years in business. The thing about it was, is the citizens came to the public hearings and were begging the council, just leave things alone. We don't want to change. We're happy with what we have. And the thing with our company is we're only in seven other cities. I mean, we have two other major cities that if they would do this, that would be 70% of the rest of our business. We'd be out of business. I mean, 46 years of hard work, out the door. And also in all the communities we're in, we donate a lot. We give back to the communities that we're in. And it would not be lost just to us, but the communities also. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, did you wish to testify?
Yes, please.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the tape, please.
My name is Mike Berkepek. I am with Ace Solid Waste, located in Ramsey, Minnesota. Our company has been around since 1955. The company is owned by a fellow who lives in New Brighton, Minnesota. I just want to reiterate what Willie said about Maplewood. Despite significant opposition from the cities in from the citizens in Maplewood, the Maplewood City Council took 20% of his business. That is a reality. I think we all know that businesses have value. Obviously, if they didn't, where would our economy be? What would the incentive for anybody to be in business? This bill is about recognizing the value of businesses and its value to a community. The trash hauling market structure in Minnesota has a long history of supporting small family-owned businesses. This bill helps to continue the support to support opportunities for small businesses like ours. It does nothing. Doing nothing guarantees, if this bill doesn't pass, it guarantees that small business will suffer. We've been around since government, before government even cared about garbage. We've always worked hauler to customer direct without government interference. This is not a utility. Times change and reasonable regulations have been a good thing for our industry. As Willie said, we've responded with new and innovative ways to make our service better. We've made significant investments of time, energy, and money to make the system better. We are like your favorite plumber, lawn care company, or other service provider to your home. It's been interesting. This is obviously new for me, and over the last few weeks, as I've worked on saving our business, the diversions related to this issue have been pretty incredible, at least from my perspective. So I need to make sure that folks hear about that and understand what's going on. First and foremost, passage of this bill in no way affects or impacts communities where the government is currently the customer. Communities like White Bear Lake, communities like Hastings, Forest Lake, and even Maplewood all have contracts with haulers. And as you see from the bill, they're exempt from any just compensation language. So I have to be candid. If somebody drones on about some analogy about how this impacts existing government purchasing, it's just simply wrong. It does not impact existing government purchasing. This bill only applies to garbage hauling, number one, and is only triggered when government steps in between a longstanding private business relationship between a hauler and a citizen. So it's when the relationship is between a hauler and a citizen is when this is impacted. Another thing that's out there is an MPCA study, and I see that something was passed out related to that. It's often quoted as the answer to this problem. I have to tell you, don't assume that this study, even though it's government produced, is unbiased. First of all, rates to citizens. The study makes broad conclusions about price. Well, we have over 2 million households in Minnesota. Okay, the data points in the study where they make the conclusion about price, it's 151 data points were considered. Okay, as a matter of fact, and this is in the study, this is directly from the study, it should be noted that this survey was not a scientific process with random sampling. There are many variables that affect pricing. And then, when you look at the study real closely, the subscription competitive market, which is the one that I'm supporting and the one that we're trying to support here, 46% of the data points were from one city. So the conclusions about price are very tightly controlled into 151 data points, and I think that's important to know. The other thing that's talked about is road wear, and I think we need to be careful. You know, in today's internet world, I don't know about you, but I've seen it. It's easy to create a graph to tell a story, to put two things together. But let's remember, and they say this in statistics a lot, you know, correlation is not causation. We've looked at street budgets for eight cities in the metro area. As a matter of fact, we hired an experienced professional engineer with direct experience in this area to help us direct city street budgets. It's interesting. In the city of Eagan, it's an open market competitive city. The cost per mile for streets, $9,000 a year. In Stillwater, a government-run garbage collection system, the cost was $13,300. But you know what? The opposite's also true. In Blaine, that's a government-run trash, the cost per mile for city streets is only $5,500. Fridley, which has an open competitive market, $10,300. So the point is this. Although garbage trucks may have an impact on the roads, there's other factors. And if you talk to engineers, specifically in Minnesota, the freeze-thaw cycle and really subgrade materials that trump all other factors. Those are the issues that affect streets. The challenge to the cities
up,
is...
Please, I think we're over the 2 minutes.
I think I'm going to be the only other one... for promotion of this, I don't know how long.
Take a few, you know, maybe another minute, but we're going to be, you know, we're asking other people to do it, so we have to kind of be even-handed.
Should I have somebody else get up and give this? Because I know there's going to be quite a few people in opposition to me.
Whichever you prefer.
There's more innovation is often accused as one of the issues. I work in Lionel Lakes and Fridley. Lionel Lakes is an open city. They've had single-sort recycling since 2006. Fridley, 7 years later, they still don't have it. I believe that the competitive market subscription service provides more innovation. And then let's remember on that MPCA study, it cost $145,000. And it's self-admitted not to be scientific, and in my mind, it's clearly biased towards government-managed collection. One other thing I want to mention is that some have said this bill creates unknown liabilities and increased costs to cities. Let's be clear. If the bill passes, the cost to cities is zero. It only costs the city money if they choose to step in the middle of the relationship between a private business and a citizen. So if nothing changes, the city has no new cost. So as far as I'm concerned, this is about fairness and making sure that cities recognize the value that businesses have. So obviously because of the Maplewood situation, and the reason we're here is because the Maplewood situation has created an unprecedented uncertainty in our business. Local haulers use local bankers to finance their businesses. What do we tell those bankers? Small business owners give personal guarantees on bank loans. The risk is huge, and the law as it currently stands makes repayment uncertain. Small family-owned businesses deserve the certainty that if government ever overtakes their business, they have an opportunity for fair compensation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next testifier. Does anyone else testify for the bill?
Mr. Chair, we do have one other hauler that is available to testify, but I think, you know, in the interest of being brief here, I don't know how many folks are going to testify in opposition, but hopefully we can be somewhat fair in either the allocation of time or the number of testifiers. It's up to you, Mr. Chair.
We can, Senator. So if you'd like, we could have take some opposition and then come back. And
let's do that.
Even it
Chair.
Out a little bit. So anyone opposed to Senate file 1664? Oh, Mark Sather, I guess, White Bear Lake. And Craig Johnson is joining him. So who would like to go first? Mr. Sather, welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the tape, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Sather. I'm the city manager of White Bear Lake, and I'm also representing the Metro Cities. Over the last several decades, there's been very few conversations about local and state government that do not involve some of the discussion of reform, and particularly the areas of improved efficiency, reduced costs, and better service. Contracting with the private sector for services traditionally provided by local government is often used as a best practice for achieving some of those objectives. Organized collection allows private solid waste haulers to operate more efficiently and to pass on those savings to our citizens. This is performed often through a contract with cities, I'd like to go through very quickly how and what motivates a city to look for some of those improvements. First, the efficiency comes with one truck going down a street. This saves the hauler a lot. It saves them in the cost of fuel. It saves them in mileage, wear and tear on the vehicle, and so forth. There's also ease in operation as well as training. To simply tell your driver to go down the block or take a quadrant of a city and pick up every house on that block, every house in that quadrant, is pretty simple, rather than having a route book where they have to go through and follow each bill or each house that's being built and so forth. The cost of billing is saved tremendously with the hauler. In our city, by the way, White Bear Lake has had a contract with a single hauler for several decades. And each hauler is their billing cost. They simply send a bill to the city once a month. The city, on its existing utility system, sends out the bill quarterly for water and sewer, and that adds it's added to that bill without additional check or payment by the residents. This provides also guaranteed collection for the hauler. We've heard from other cities and other haulers where they talk about someone leaves in the middle of the night, owes them for a couple of months. In White Bear Lake, one of the things we advertise when we're going out for bids is the fact that we will guarantee the payment for each hauler or each resident that's collected. And it also creates an environment where it is open to innovation. And if I had more time here, I could give you some excellent examples. But one thing I'd point out is each time the city of White Bear Lake, our contracts generally are for 4 to 5 years. Each time we put it up for bid, unless we negotiate an extension, it has been a small hauler that's received this. That's won the bid. It's been, it's been Gopher Sanitation from St. Paul. It was Knutson Sanitation from the east side of metro area and so forth that won the bid, even though places like Waste Management, Browning Ferris, and so forth were bidding against them. And they won the bid because they came in with the lowest cost because they had developed a proposal or work plan for the city that exhibited several innovative techniques. The services to our residents. And keep in mind that the contract might be with the city, but the city is the intermediary. The city is not the consumer in this case. The consumer is our resident.
Excuse me, Mr. Sather. Where does your city come in looking at the average monthly rate on a 30-gallon? For example, how does that compare to the PCA study?
Monthly rate at $9.70 for a senior citizen and for a regular non-senior citizen resident, $9.50 and $9.70 for a non-senior.
Okay, thank you.
So that would be, if I were listing the benefits to our residents, it would be, one would be the low cost, but one would be the fact that once a week a garbage truck comes down their street, not several times a week. That is wear and tear on a street. Perhaps it's been diminished. I don't think the comparisons that are given either are fair. Eagan and Stillwater, for instance, aren't fair comparisons for street. I've been in city management in Minnesota for 38 years, and those two cities are clearly different. But this time of year when the frost is coming out of the street, a fully packed garbage hauler is one of the heaviest vehicles that would go down the street. If you can have one go down rather than three or four, that's a definite savings on the investment in that public infrastructure. We have same day. We can do a lot of things like same day recycling. I'm a resident of White Bear Lake. On Wednesdays, I put my garbage and my recycling out. Come by, it's all done at one time. Our recycling is among some of the highest in the metropolitan area because of some of the coordination we can get. Low cost, we talk guaranteed service. If we can guarantee to our residents high quality service, and if not, there's a penalty to the hauler, and then the matter is corrected. Convenient payment, I mentioned that, Mr. Chair. I'll just try to wrap up real quick. But another value to us is it allows the city to fulfill a mandate. The state requires the city councils or cities to ensure that every house in their community has solid waste collection. And through a contract of this nature, we're able to comply with the law. Talked about the disposal designation. I'm not sure it's as big an issue right now, but there was not long ago with a case in East Metro area regarding landfill contamination. White Bear Lake was able to, or a lot of organized cities, were able to free themselves of that liability by being able to show where their refuse collected in their city was disposed of. And we're working with Ramsey and Washington County for a much more efficient disposal system. We could designate the fact that our waste was taken there and not, in some cases, out of state because it was cheaper. And there's environmental impacts in that regard, obviously. We have incentive pricing for recycling. And consequently, we pay the price that we charge for 90-gallon rate. And Mr. Chair, you asked a good question, because what we charge our 30-gallon rate is relatively low because we charge our 90-gallon rate more to create more of a differential to create a greater incentive for individuals to recycle. So consequently, we have very high recycling volumes, and we've brought down the costs or the volume of solid waste that's taken from our city.
So
we have revenue sharing.
Before you wrap up, what is the 90-gallon price?
90-gallon rate is
$19.40. Okay, thank you.
And I would point out that is greater than what it costs the city to have that picked up. The cost to the city is $16.40. But then the city council actually has adopted a rate structure that reduces the rate for the 30-gallon, increases the rate for the 90-gallon in order to encourage more recycling. We have revenue sharing. We collect between our hauler and the city, we collect $10,000 a month in the value of recycled material. And that's shared with our residents, and it reduces the cost.
Okay, thank you. We need to switch to Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Johnson, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Be very brief because we have some county officials that came a long ways to be here today. So just very briefly, I would point out that the market for solid waste with customers exists because state law mandates that cities must assure that every person has a solid waste pickup. It's a requirement. So it is not necessarily that an industry has gone in and carefully developed a base of people that now want their services. It's that you are required as a resident of a city to hire one of them. And the city's job in statute is to use one of three techniques to get that service out. We have three options. One is what you've heard referred to as open collection. What that means is if you are found to not have a proper hauler servicing you, you get fined and charged by the city for not having an appropriate contract. The second is the city can pick up the garbage themselves and run a municipal garbage service. We have a number of communities that have done that. And the third is the city can organize collection and put up a contract where they negotiate on behalf of the taxpayers of their community how the service will be provided to the entire city, what the rates will be, what services will be provided. Those are the three tools we are given in statute, and we are required to use one of them. The bill that you have before you, as amended, says that two of those would have such a high financial cost attached to them that if you chose to go in and try and use one of those, you would no longer find that viable. So it really says you get three tools, but you can't use two. The bill that's in front of you right now, as amended, is actually more restrictive than the bill as introduced. Because now, initially it was a taking under Chapter 117, It is now a contractual obligation under 471, which is the local procurement law. And it would now be a requirement of any contract that a local government has that, as you read in the Delete All Amendment, line 1.6, political subdivision must pay, period. They don't even have to file a claim anymore. It's state law. And from there on, when you look at the later part of the bill, statute of limitations in 1.27, that statute of limitations that's nice and short is for how long the city would have to try and challenge the claim of lost revenue that an industry makes. We would have 60 days to appeal their claim, or at the end of that 60 days, their claim is statutorily required to be paid. So we would have to go to court to try and negotiate with a judge a different number than was submitted by the hauler as the claim of damages. That's just a clarity point that I wanted to make sure was mentioned. I would also just point out, Mr. Chair, that there's one very interesting part to this whole negotiation on this bill. As was mentioned by the haulers and is accurate, this bill, as it's been amended over the process, does not apply to a city that already has organized collection. So if your firm provides all the garbage service to White Bear Lake, every 5 years they put that up for bid. If you lose the bid and lose the entire city, 100% of the business of that city, to another company, that is not a taking. That is not a compensatable harm to you under this legislation.
Would you like it to be?
Mr. Chair, it would be consistent with my position on the bill already, which is that we're not very supportive of it. But okay.
We've been about 12 minutes on cons and
Mr. Chair, I just did want to point out that under this bill, the first time a contract is put up for bid, if you are not the low bid, if you lose the contract because your bid is not the lowest, you get damages. Every future time, you don't. Mm-hmm. And you can lose the whole city. That's what this law would now change, is to make it that you could never implement this again without having to pay damages to everybody. It's really trying to take this off the table entirely. I would add there's a number of circumstances that are not as 100%. We have cities that are partially organized. We have cities that provide municipal service. And when the city expands, this would allow a claim against every city as they extend service to a new part of their city that currently is served by a different hauler, even though the city itself normally covers garbage hauling for all of its residents. I can explain that more if people have questions on it, Mr. Chair. I'll end my testimony there.
Would Commissioner Kordiak, he's on the list here, would he like to quickly give his testimony, and then we could take another four if you want, Senator Reitman?
Senator,
nice
to see you again today.
We served together as commissioners many years ago, and so we've known each other for a long time.
Senator Vandiver and members, good morning, good afternoon. I am Jim Kordiak, a county commissioner for Anoka County. On behalf of the most part of the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board, a body that I've served on for many years, I believe I can also speak for the interest of AMC as well as Micah, I might add. I'm joined by several county commissioners. I might just ask them to raise their hand, for they probably will not be here to speak, but there are several commissioners here today. Thank you very much. I think the furthest away I saw was from Lake of the Woods, so I'm not sure where all they're hearing from. But they are joined in this interesting discussion point. I have served not only on my county board for 20-some years. I've been very active, probably for almost all of those years, with the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board. I think that I probably was their chair for a number of years, and I have been very active in the area of solid waste issues and recycling. It's a very enamoring subject, I have to tell you. I don't know how I chose that one. It's a complicated arena, but it's a changing world out there. Can I comment that what we had, that the supporters of this bill, I might suggest, are suggesting that the scope, that this is very limited scope of this bill, and for the most part really serves to protect citizens from government. Now, I'd hate to think that our citizens need protection from government, quite frankly, and I really strongly disagree with that premise. I mean, what you're really creating here is a new governmentally protected class of business interest without considering the other entities that also work the same and similar field. There's thousands of haulers out there that work in every other industry, quite frankly. To pre-select this group and treat them differently from any others would seem to be an irresponsible direction to move in my estimation. As I think about what I do as county commissioner, I would never be able to measure the number of contracts that I've brought in from rebuilding parts of my construction buildings, to so many things that I've done, to think that I would not be able to have that flexibility to make decisions, who I buy gas from tomorrow and who I buy gas from the other day without compensating those that I might have moved away from, would be simply an awkward relationship that I would have in my county as I try and be responsible to my constituents and their financial needs. I might comment too that there's a simple matter at stake, and it has to do with how we manage our solid waste in our region. You've helped me to build a cooperative relationship over 20 and 30 years that the haulers and I have been partners with government forever, whether it's within our counties or my municipalities of every kind. It's been a working relationship that served to meet our metropolitan landfill needs, our resource recovery facilities, to manage our recycling. It's been a good relationship. We have differing interests, quite frankly, and that's, I guess, what the nature of the economy around us is all about. And I think that to move hastily in this item here, it would not seem to be in anyone's best interest. I think we're trying to make a determination here based upon one curious example that we find in the metropolitan area, cast against 1,000 examples that I can point to. 19 jurisdictions in my own county exist, and there are 400 of them across the state of Minnesota. Public policy making is a slow and deliberate process. And you know, and I know, that every time we make one decision, we affect scores of other things along the way. And I would suggest to you that to move in the direction of this action here, albeit it's of limited scope, is argued, opens the door to an endless variety of possibilities that I would not care to choose to measure. If I have to reimburse somebody every time I move to somebody else in government, you and I would not be very happy about that outcome. I would suggest that this bill is for the most part, I think, in poor public policy. We coexist with the waste stream managers, and we have for many, many years. We're really creating a separate class if we were to do this. For haulers now are a protected class within government, locking our hands to make decisions that are in the best interest of our constituents, which I do and you do every single day. I like to be cost-effective and responsible and meet their needs, and I believe that we've done that so very well in the swim club relationship and some others.
We do have another commissioner that wants to testify.
Thank you.
So I
would just say that if this bill were to pass, I think that you may as well then turn the responsibility of managing this region's waste to the industry, because if you lock our hands and not allow governments to manage the waste of our residents and our businesses, then we have no role to meet those goals, and others may have to choose to do that on our behalf. Okay,
thank you,
Senators.
And then Mr. Commissioner Helmers, Olmsted County, can you do your testimony in about a minute?
Mr. Chair, I'm John Helmers, and I'm not a commissioner. I'm a county employee, and we have Troy Freihammer who wanted to start out, and we're going to keep our testimony as short as possible.
Okay, state your name for the tape, please. Thank you.
Yep. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Troy Freihammer. I work in the Environmental Services Department of Stearns County, also Vice President of Solid Waste Administrators Association. This bill hinders solid waste administrators when working with the local units of government to fulfill the various statutory responsibilities embodied in the solid waste management laws and rules, specifically protecting and regulating public health, welfare, and safety by developing environmentally protective waste management systems. For Stearns County, meeting the statutory responsibilities is accomplished through adoption of ordinances effectively making mixed municipal solid waste collection and transportation the sole responsibility of the county. To fulfill this responsibility while maintaining public and private sector participation, Stearns County licensed and contracts with the private and public solid waste businesses to provide curbside collection services. Those businesses may, in turn, choose to use a solid waste transfer station and transfer trailer operators to deliver the solid waste to a processing and disposal facility. With this legislation, Stearns County, like many other counties and cities in the state, potentially face new liabilities in its contracts with new and existing firms, as well as liabilities to transfer stations, transfer trailer operators, processing and disposal facilities. Because counties support the backbone of solid waste activities in the state, we have many questions about how this bill may impact the facilities and programs in which we have invested in order to carry out those responsibilities. John Helmers of Olmsted County will speak of a specific example. On behalf of the solid waste administrators of the state, I request further examination of the unclear definitions and other implications of this bill before it moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Helmers? Be quick. You see how mad they get if they don't get to ask questions and stuff. So,
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm John Helmers. I'm the solid waste manager for Olmsted County, and just wanted to give you an example of one system where the state and the county and the private entities have worked together successfully over 25 years to build an integrated solid waste management system that fulfills the needs that were for public health and safety, as well as for the practical thing of getting rid of stuff. The Olmsted County has invested over $150 million into an integrated solid waste management system. The state of Minnesota has contributed $12.2 million into that system. And we have one that goes from soup to nuts. It goes from public education, household hazardous waste management, recycling, yard waste composting, waste to energy, and landfilling. And it works very well. We have contracts with our private haulers, not for collection, so this law typically would not directly affect it from that standpoint. We have it for delivery of the waste. But the way we got those contracts with the haulers the first time was we had to make provisions to do organized collection, to bring them to the table, to talk about it. Because in their minds, we were taking business away from them at that time when we decided we were going to contract to get the waste to our facilities and manage it at home in a fashion where we protect the environment and we do it responsibly and for an affordable cost, rather than just let the waste go anywhere. Waste is unique in that it's not a commodity that's being transferred between the generator of the waste, the homeowner, or the business that generates the waste. They hire a hauler to do nothing but haul it. They don't take ownership. The hauler does not take ownership of that waste. And if there's future liability associated with that waste, it comes back to the generator of the waste. That happened in Rochester a number of years ago. They had a $400,000 bill that got tacked onto the city, and the city had to pay because of a landfill cleanup somewhere. It happened in other communities in our region. We, as a response to the 1980s laws that required counties to take management responsibility for solid waste, Olmsted County has stepped forward and built a system that works quite well. This law would take away one of the tools that we have as a county to manage our system. Our haulers, if you ask them, they would say it's working. They all compete fairly on the collection of the system. They could just as easily compete fairly on a collection in an organized system, but they've organized not to do that.
We've been about 2-1 on the con, so if you can wrap up real quick.
The last point that I need to make is that it's not just solid waste management that's being affected by this law. It would be Chapter 471 dealing with the contracts, and that opens up a whole can of worms that's going to make it very, very difficult for businesses to be a part of government solutions in the future. So thank you very much.
I'd
be
willing to answer questions.
Mr. Chair, I know we have other haulers here in the room. I don't know whether they can add anything new to what's been said, but if they can, I hope they will. I think it's Mr. Walter.
Good afternoon. George Walter from Walter's Recycling and Refuse. Thank you for letting me have a few minutes of your valuable time, but I just want to make a few comments. You heard some testimony from a few of the cities, specifically White Bear, about all the great things about organized collection and the city can take over and run the system. Well, this bill has basically doesn't change that. The cities still have the right to do that. The bill doesn't take that right away from them. All the bill does is create a system that it's a fairness issue. You know, you hear all the stories about all the small businesses in the United States that get nervous when Walmart moves in and kind of runs them out of business because they can't compete. Fortunately, in our business, that's not the case. I'm a small business owner in Anoka County, and I have no problem competing with the very large corporations. My biggest fear is the government taking my business from me that I've worked so hard for all these years. I feel like it's a situation where they walk up and say, gee, Mr. Walter, we really like you. You're doing a great job, but we're taking your customers from you, and we're going to give them to someone else. So I think that's the core of the issue. It's a fairness issue. We heard some testimony from Mr. Kordiak about how government takes their time and the process to make law changes, and the decisions that they make affect have an effect on something, I totally agree with them. Maplewood had a significant impact on a small business, a small independent hauler, and that decision is significant for him. There's some testimony about the disposal of waste. Well, I haul all of my customers. I'm hauling in municipalities that are open subscription, and we've been providing waste to all the resource recovery facilities since I started in 1988. So it seems like there's a little fear that they're not going to get their waste. Well, it's an open hauling system. The rules are set up the way the rules are set up right now, and they're getting their waste. This doesn't change that. All this does is say, as the government takes my business from me, I think I should be fairly compensated for it, for all my hard work. I think that's about all I got to say.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Walters, one of the things that if a political subdivision decided to go to an organized system and contract it out and you won the bid from that, wouldn't you get compensated for losing the business and then have all your business right back because you won the bid for that? But that's part of what I'm frustrated with here is that there's no option. And the other part about that is if a community did that, they would have no way of knowing before they made that decision what their liability would be because it's not set anyplace here.
Well, I'm no expert in writing the law, but since we've been involved with trying to move this legislation, it's not been the intent. If I'm a hauler in a community and I submit a proposal and I get the entire committee, I have not been displaced. So in my mind, I wouldn't have any legal rights. Well, you have to ask the technical lawyers that question to be a little more specific, but...
Are there any more questions?
Mr. Chair, if I
could.
This bill applies when a city makes a change with its from open collection to organized collection or city-managed collection. And if you're talking about, in one instance, having five haulers, going from five haulers to issuing three licenses via contract, there are going to be a couple of losers there. And what happens is you might bid, and you might lose your bid, but the city is going to confiscate your accounts. And those accounts will be given to somebody else. And that's what we're talking about trying to compensate. If you're the loser on that bid, you've just been put out of business in that city. And that's where the fair market valuation payment should come in. If you've then been one of the winners, say you're one of the three, Senator Kielash, and you win a contract, this language does not then, if you subsequently lose the contract later to a bid, compensate you. It's only when that city moves from the open collection to the organized collection or in the instance where the city decides they are going to take over this market altogether, and some can do that as well. We're talking about the transition from free market and a competitive industry to when it's government-controlled industry in that community. And I think that's a very important transition for a community to make, and I think that there may need to be compensation for that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kielash.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, but government makes decisions all the time. You can no longer use this item on the street because it was found to be more hazardous, and that business has to adjust, and businesses have to adjust to the changing marketplace and to the changing conditions, just like, you know, it wasn't so very long ago that everybody burned their garbage and we had to change. So those folks that were selling garbage burning barrels lost their business. And what you're saying here is that any change that the government decides to make needs to be compensated for, whether or not, in the case I just cited, that if the guy still got business out of this, he still recovered his business, he would get compensated and still get the contract, or could still get the contract, or he could use that same compensation to undercut a contract in another city. That's part of it. This is not necessarily a fairness issue across the board because the guy is getting compensated for not doing the work, and he has
that compensation that he can say, I can win this contract with the money that I made off of City X to go bid against the contract in City Y. That's hardly a fair system, and the fact that governments change laws and change need to be able to make that change for whatever reason. This is just one specific example, but it opens up a whole can of worms to, you know, it, just about anybody, anytime we change any kind of law around here, whose business is hurt.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ertling.
If I could, to Senator Kielash's point, I'm so glad you brought that up, Senator Kielash. I think this is very specific. I don't think it has broader application, and here's why. If you're a garbage hauler in 2010, you have a certain amount of business, and you've got an investment in that business, and you can probably sell it on the open market to some other garbage hauler. It's got a fair market value. You can sell those clients in that book of business. If the government then comes in 2011 and says, we're going to take it, because we want to give it to one of your competitors because we're only going to have three haulers in the city now, you've just lost your business. And that's why we're talking about compensating this. And when I've heard from the testimony of these garbage haulers, these folks have borrowed money to build their business. They buy very expensive garbage hauling trucks for which they owe payments back to the bank. They bought the business out from their parents, and they owe those parents money. That's what we're talking about here, and I think this is a very different example than just a very broad brush, which is what I hear in your question.
Okay, further discussion.
Competitions.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, we get upset when we can't ask questions. We also get upset when we don't hear from the testifiers. That was also a reason why we got upset at that last bill, because we didn't get to hear from the people that were affected by the bill. So I'm glad you're hearing testimony from people that are affected by the bill for this bill. I appreciate that. I have a question about the precedent that we're setting with this bill. I know that cities do a lot of services, and they probably put a lot out to bid, like snow shoveling, street cleaning, tree trimming. So in those cases, you know, that they'll be picking a person. So then if the people don't get those bids, would that be a possibility that they would have to, that they would be able to get, you know, have the right to get compensated for losing that business also?
Senator Wolf, you had a question.
Is that a question? Oh, Mr. Chair, I can respond. I don't think the analogy is applicable here. If the city decides that it's got contract work to do for garbage hauling, there's no, for its own services, there's no application here. And the same is true if they contract for snow removal or shoveling or anything else.
So, Mr. Chair, could I just get a clarification? No clarification on my answer.
We'll come back to that. Senator,
okay.
Wolf, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just I do have a question. I have a comment, but if Senator McGuire has a follow-up to that question, I can wait. It'll make more sense.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Senator Wolf. Well, I was just curious what I guess I didn't understand your answer. Are you saying that they would have a cause also, that snow shovelers and tree trimmers would also be able to get compensated?
Mr. Chair, no. The analogy doesn't apply. Because if the city wants to hire tree trimmers for its premises, the city-owned premises, it's not affected here. But you're not talking about the city hiring tree trimmers for the customers in their community and then collecting the charges or forcing them to use that vendor. That's not what we're talking about here.
But, Mr. Chair, just one, oftentimes the city does bring in tree trimmers, and sometimes they assess the property for that, or they bring in curb and gutter. You know, they do services that they do assess the citizens of the city for. So I think there are similarities here that we are in danger of setting a precedent for, that we're going to be holding our local units of government for services for the benefit of the community that take the marketplace and the bidding process out of them.
Mr. Chair, we're talking about permitting through or government control of an industry or service industry through limited numbers of permits.
Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I just want to clarify, since this comment keeps coming up in this committee about the first bill that we heard, a bill that we did hear in two committees already. Today was not the first time we heard it. We've had about 2 hours worth of discussion and testimony on that, and there was a week between the last time we discussed it and today where, if there were still questions, they could have asked the author about it. As far as this issue goes, I'm a little frustrated that we keep hearing about the haulers and the cities, but my perspective is from a consumer, I like having that option of choosing who gives me that service. I don't want to see the city coming in and start deciding who, like you brought up, who's going to come in and trim my trees, who's going to haul my garbage. I happen to like my garbage hauler, and I like the service I get. And if I don't, I can take it upon myself to go look at different bids or different services and make that choice. What recourse do I have if the city makes that choice and I don't like the service? So I just have an issue with the whole concept of the city taking over, period, which is, I know, not the extent of what we're talking about, but I want to make sure that we get the consumer's plug in there that, you know, we're talking about taking away a consumer's ability to choose who they want to do that service for them.
I think George Washington said, "Government is not eloquence or reason. Government is force." Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add that I was recently assessed over $8,000 to have the street in front of my house repaired, and I consider myself a consumer in the city, and I'm not real happy about 5-6 trucks driving on that every week, heavy-duty trucks, especially at this time of year when the frost is going out.
Mr. President?
Senator
Wolf. Mr. President.
Oh, wow.
Mr. Chair. It's been a long day. I did not just elevate him.
Not interested,
Senator Wolf. Washington?
President Washington.
It's got a nice ring.
Mr. Chair, may I respond to that?
Certainly.
Valid argument, and I agree completely as far as the wear and tear on the roads. And what we did in my neighborhood is we took that upon ourselves, and we as a neighborhood decided that we did not want all that traffic on our road, and we did the research, and we looked into different garbage haulers, and we just made a decision, and we all chose as a neighborhood to have one hauler come.
You have more cooperative neighbors than I do.
I like that.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I introduced a bill, essentially this bill, several years ago when the haulers and the municipalities first began to say that they wanted to do this, that the municipalities were going to control this industry this way. And we were told at the time that the municipalities would work well with the haulers. They weren't going to try and put anybody out of business. They were going to work cooperatively. And many of them have, and I say congratulations to them, including Olmsted County. They've not had any problem. They've worked with the haulers. But we now have a concrete example in the city of Maplewood where they were not able to do that. And that's what this bill addresses. It gives them an opportunity to seek that fair market value when the cities aren't working cooperatively with these haulers.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Dale Tripler, and I've requested to speak. I'm a private citizen. I will tell you that I serve on two commissions for the city of Maplewood, and I was involved in going to organized collection from the very beginning. That is not the case at all. I have prepared some remarks here, but I'll make them brief because many of them have already been talked about.
Thank you.
This proposed bill speaks only to trash haulers, nothing else, no other business. Why are trash haulers special, and why are they treated differently? Recycling and trash hauling is exactly the same except for where the products end up at the from the curb. The trucks are almost identical. The routes are the same. The companies are the same, and yet this bill treats those two entities completely differently. Tennis just complained that they lost 20% of their business when they lost a competitive bid for trash hauling in Maplewood. What they didn't tell you is that they won the competitive bid last year for the recycling contract for the city of Maplewood against the very same companies that they bid against for trash hauling, large as well as small companies. They are now the sole recycler hauler for the city of Maplewood, replacing Eureka, which had the contract for 5 years. Under the rationale of this bill, shouldn't Tennis be required to pay Eureka for their loss of revenue? I hope not, because I think that's ridiculous. But why are these two things differently? Is providing a better service at a cheaper price now not a good thing? Do businesses now expect government to protect them from competition? Can a business now expect to be reimbursed with taxpayer dollars for not being competitive? This proposed bill says that once you get into a market, you can count on keeping your customers regardless of whether a competitor can provide a better, less expensive service. Why? Because if you lose a competitive bid, you can sue to recover your lost revenues. Well, apparently with the new amendment, you don't have to sue. You'll just get free money. The competitive process that we went through with the City of Maplewood, we followed the letter of 115A94, which is a long, protracted process. Most bids take 1 to 4 months. It took over 2 years. Most bids cost about $5,000 of city cost. This cost over $70,000. As part of the process, our RFP allowed for splitting the city up into 5 zones and allowed for multiple haulers to join together or submit a joint bid, or they could submit a bid individually. We provided trash haulers with a scoring system that they would know exactly what we were looking for and how many points we would provide for each of those topics. Everyone knew exactly what to expect, but out of the RFPs that were sent out, only 4 companies submitted proposals. A panel of judges, of which I was one, scored the proposal and submitted our recommendations to the City Council, which selected the low-cost bidder. The RFP process was used exactly as the same as it was.
Senator Nelson has a question.
Mr. Chair and committee, we've heard a lot of discussion on this particular bill today. I know that we've got another bill that's up, and I would move that we lay this on the table.
Okay. Senator Nelson moves to lay the bill on the table. I believe that's non-debatable. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no?
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is on the table.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much for your patience and for hearing all these testifiers today. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
Senator Perry.
I think we should send it to judiciary.
It would be the same thing. It would be the same thing.
I think we should send it to judiciary.
Commerce, the judiciary.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Fantastic. You should have been there.
Was it from you?
No, it was from us.
It is.
Does it come to us?
And Senator McGuire and I are the grand.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Dig masters.
Good afternoon, Senator Perry. Welcome to the committee.
All right, thank you very much, folks. I have been guaranteed by the great Secretary of State, Mark Ritchie, we will be this long. This is the HAVA bill. Peace in the Valley. It was the pancakes in my office.
We'll decide.
But we're here to discuss the HAVA bill. I believe you know about. There was a request for, I believe, $1.425 million for HAVA funds. And I think with that, I would just like the Secretary to move quickly through just to update those members what that money he would intend to use that money for.
Secretary Ritchie, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, and thank you, Senator Perry and Senator Chamberlain, for bringing this bill forward and helping us move through the process. Last year, as a full committee and as a full Senate, you approved our total budget for our HAVA funds based on the plan from many years ago. In the summer negotiations, half of that money was withheld for consideration for this year. We are back with a specific proposal for the $1.425 million for our work this year for the redistricting, for the presidential election year, and for all the things that we do. Real quickly, we use the money to maintain the county's level statewide voter registration system. That's the entire system that the whole state uses. Another portion of the money is for the data verification. We work with corrections. We work with the courts. We work with the health department. We work with Social Security, Department of Motor Vehicles, Department of Public Safety, all of that data matching to ensure the eligibility of our voters. Another portion is for our military and overseas voters. We maintain a special website and tracking so that they know where their ballots are and have the ability to order those and to get those quickly. They can get them back to us. Support for our local officials. We are the backbone for our training, for all of the things that we do. And a great deal of our support has gone to those local officials, their county, their city, and their township. We have federal reporting. Some of you have known this in the past. We occasionally get HAVA funds that are specifically for towns, townships, to build ramps and other amenities so that people with disabilities can have easy access to the polling place. We administer those funds. We report on those funds. They're audited. So there's a small amount for that. Voter outreach and education, we do a lot of training, particularly of our local officials and others who need to know how our system works, and we maintain the hotline for people who are calling, and that includes the online system for looking up. And finally, there is have been a very successful process of our Election Integrity Task Force. Senator Chamberlain has been your appointee on that committee, as with Senator Sieben. We had a committee report. That report has been translated into legislation and is moving for specifically to make sure that there is a good system of informing people who are not yet eligible to vote, who are felons who've served or not served, but who are not yet off paper. And second, to make sure that we have the access to the corrections database so we can mark the local poll registers so that it is known in case somebody makes a mistake or believes they're off paper.
Thank you, Senator
that's
Ritchie.
Thank you very much,
Senator
Mr. Chairman.
Ritchie, we do have Senator Chamberlain has an amendment. Who's the A1 amendment? It is in your packets. Okay, to the A1 amendment, Senator Chamberlain. It looks like it's just preserving money from this appropriation for implementing the Photo ID Act. Is that correct? If it's passed by the voters.
Yes, Mr. Chair. B under number 3 down there. Yes.
Okay, discussion to the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much is that dollar amount?
$1.2
million. My question is then regarding the HAVA money that would be appropriated to a potential success of a marriage, or not marriage, as last year, voter ID constitutional question. Is $1.1 million enough, Mr. Secretary, regarding that?
Secretary,
could we get a copy of the amendment?
That seems reasonable, Senator or Kyle.
Mr. Chair,
well, they're on the table.
Just a technical question.
Yes.
Senator. Just a technical question, and on the amendment, it says for fiscal. I believe this is to be spent in fiscal year 2013, and that was a lot of this is set aside for 2013. Is this supposed to be an appropriation for 2012?
Secretary Ritchie.
Mr. Chairman, first answer Senator Limmer's question and then the technical, or how would
that's
you?
Fine. Go ahead.
To Senator Limmer's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Senator Limmer. The various proposals that have been made for the amendment that was passed by the House and is coming to you soon have been $12 million, $20 million, some $40 million. So the 1.2 would be a very tiny part of what will be needed. We need the funds to operate the elections this year, and they can come from general funds, they can come from HAVA. You know, that part is, we're fine with however that might happen. But to your specific question, it would take quite a bit more money to do the whole package. This would just be a tiny part of it if that was to be used for that purpose. And to the Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, this appropriation is normally done in a two-year chunk. It was passed by you last year in the two-year chunk, so through July and then July through next year, fiscal year 13. And the final day of the negotiation in the summer, only half of it, so to speak, was allocated with the second half. We had to come back this year. So this is for spending from July through the fall election through next year.
Right. Mr. Chair, on this, it's appropriating money for implementing a voter identification requirements as enacted by law. What does that mean?
Well, Senator Kielach, that's actually Senator Chamberlain's amendment.
I'm sorry.
Can you please repeat the question, Senator Kielach?
Yeah, it's on 1.11 of the amendment to 1.12, it's pursuant to Help America Act for implementing a voter photo identification requirement as enacted by law.
It looks, Senator Kulesh, like a savings account to help enact that if the voters pass it, so that we're not leaving the whole, paying for the whole thing to the next legislature. So it's like a deposit is how I read that. Senator Chamberlain, is that?
That is correct. Yes. And, of course, if it were not to pass, it could be reappropriated in different ways.
Senator Kulesh.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it seems like we're kind of restricting the Secretary of State's office from even taking care of this year's election with this amendment. I'm not sure. How big is the HAVA account for the state of Minnesota? Is this something that we get appropriated federally every year?
Secretary Ritchie.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kulesh, we believe this is the last of the HAVA allocations that will come from the federal government. They've said no 4 years in a row. The allocation for us to do this year's election and all the work that we've laid out would leave about $300,000, depending on what the interest rate produces, in the account, and that would be the end of it. Most of the money that's come has gone for counties to purchase voting equipment. That was the main purpose, and then to create the statewide voter registration database and to maintain it. But this is the end of those funds. There's been lobbying to try to get the feds to pick up their responsibility, but the answer so far has been no.
So, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Two-year bill, Senator Perry. Is that any other testifiers? Senator Lemmer.
Thank you. Mr. Secretary, could you please explain the felon portion of the bill again? What does it allow the department to do with felons?
Secretary Ritchie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Lemmer. The Election Integrity Task Force report had a number of specific things that came in two major categories. One was notification of individuals who've lost their right to vote and have not yet received their full sentence. They're not yet off paper. And that notification comes through a number of specific ways, everything from a big sign to a letter to a face-to-face with their parole or corrections or probation officer to a notification by the judge when they lose their right. So part of it is the notification portion. The second portion is the information from corrections, which will supplement what we get from the courts so that we can note in our statewide voter registration database and therefore print on the rosters that go to the local election officials that this person, to our knowledge, based on the data files from courts and corrections, has been convicted of a felony and is not yet completed their full sentence. So notification so that people don't make a foolish mistake, and information on the whole roster so that if somebody does come in, we can catch it and we can say it. We also then will run the list after the election to see if anyone did make the mistake.
Right. Senator Lemmer.
Mr. Chair, so this is a notification to felons that maybe for one reason or another, maybe they're getting out of prison but going on parole, or maybe they are going straight to a probation
to community
sentence. They've been found guilty, they've lost their civil right to vote, and that this is a notice to advise them under that status that they do not have their right. And then when their sentence is fully commuted, then does this also include a notice to be sent to them that their sentence is over and now they can have their right to vote restored?
Senator Lemmer, would your committee like to see the bill?
Maybe.
Secretary Ritchie.
I just need details.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lemmer, the two parts of the notification, the focus of them is making sure that law enforcement has, when they do need to prosecute someone, a sheet of paper that said this person acknowledge that they had been told. So it's a prosecution
they
tool.
They sign it.
Yeah.
They sign receipt.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, the reason I'm asking is that Senator Higgins has a bill exactly for this purpose. It's a policy bill. And this is, would this do the same thing? Or is this just reserving monies for a possibility that we pass that?
Senator Richards,
I think
Secretary
Representative Champion has it in the House.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, this bill is carried by Senator Chamberlain in the Senate and Representative Benson in the House, who are the two appointees from the majority caucuses on the Election Integrity Task Force. Senator Chamberlain, I don't know its exact status where it is, but I think it's been moving through the Senate on a kind of regular basis. Am I correct?
Yes, yes, Secretary of State. It has been referred to Judiciary.
Senator Robley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know this is coming to the Finance Committee, but I kind of think the bill you're referring to is actually one that would allow felons who are still serving under supervised release to vote. But this, you don't think so? It's just notification?
Right. I think it may have been engrossed into this type of fashion. But I don't know where it would have been, gone to first.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know anything about those other bills. This is specifically from the Election Integrity Task Force.
I need another bill like a hole in the head.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry.
Senator Robles.
This a type of bill like this was around before, or some sort of funding. I believe maybe you had your office had proposed it. It didn't ever make it all the way through the process, but it basically is to notify felons either that they're not eligible to vote or that they now have become eligible to vote, because we have had a problem with felons voting illegally.
That's right.
And I think that's what they're trying to correct.
No problem.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry.
Secretary Ritchie and I are doing our best to move your committee along, because I know you've been here a long time. I just thought I'd remind you of we're doing our part.
Senator Perry, you and Secretary Ritchie have done an excellent job.
Thank you.
That's why we were questioning whether Senator Limmer wished to see the bill in his committee.
Mr. Chair, he
said he doesn't need another bill.
Mr. Chair, I think to that point, if you don't mind.
Senator Kalish.
Yeah, because one of the things that I have a question on, 1.9, it's $50,000 for eligibility notification letters to felons, comma, if required by law. Is there a law currently that does that, or is this in anticipation that something's going to pass this year, or that's where I'm kind of in...
Secretary Richards.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kalish, absolutely. The Election Integrity Task Force had an interim report, an excellent report. I'm sure you all read it closely. Yeah. It was translated into legislation, and Senator Chamberlain in your House and Representative Benson, and it's a fabulous piece of legislation that is moving, and I think moving real appropriately. So this is, if that bill ultimately is passed by your body and both bodies, this makes that makes it possible for that to be whole.
So can Senator Chamberlain?
We don't need to.
Okay, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just move the bill.
If this funding mechanism follows another bill, have we just gotten in the way of that, or no, since Senator Chamberlain's off amendment? So is this the amendment that we put on, does that still make that all happen?
Senator McGuire, if this is not getting in the way, if it doesn't pass, then the money just stays where it is. Which is going to happen if we don't hurry up here.
Chair.
Secretary Ritchie. Oh, just wants us to hurry up. I think.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, could I move the bill? Move Senate File 1832 as amended, be recommended to pass, and move to the floor.
Government.
Finance?
Government Innovation and Veterans.
Okay, that's the one.
Senator Limmer moves Senate File 1832 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on State Government, Innovation, and Veterans. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much. Chair.
Now, I think we are also here we go. Adjourned.
Roger slams his head on the table one more time.
That's where we ended.